Luke 12:22-34. Then turning to his disciples, Jesus said, "This is why I tell you not to worry about everyday life, whether you have enough food to eat or enough clothes to wear. 23. For life is more than food and your body more than clothing. Look at the ravens. They do not plant or harvest or store food in the barns, for God feeds them. You are far more valuable to him than any birds. Can all your worries in a single moment to your life add a single moment to your life? And if worrying can accomplish a little thing like that, what's the use of worrying over bigger things? Look at the lilies and how they grow. They didn't work or make their clothing. Yet Solomon in all his glory was not dressed as beautifully as they were. And if God cares so wonderfully for flowers that are here today and thrown into fires tomorrow, he will certainly care for you. Why do you feel so little faith? And don't be concerned about what to eat or drink. Don't worry about such things. These things dominate the thoughts of unbelievers all over the world. But your Father already knows your needs. Seek the kingdom of God above all else, and he will give you everything you need. So don't be afraid, little flock, for it gives your Father great happiness to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give those to those in need, and they will store up treasures for you in heaven. And the purses of heaven never grow old or develop holes. Your treasure will be safe. No thief can steal it, and no moth can destroy it. Wherever your treasure is, there is the desires of your heart will also be."
Last week, Mark brought a beautiful message. I found it helpful. I found it moving. I'll try to summarize what I took away from it. When I find myself in time of trouble, God is there with us. We ask, we want for God to fix it. God says, "I'm here." It's a loving presence. When we see problems in our lives or in the world around us, God is with us, not fixing those problems, but present and loving like a good parent or a friend. If we're in God's loving presence, the unfixed problems don't matter as much. The only thing to fear is being apart from God. When we look at the problems of the world, we may ask God to fix them, and we just get this loving presence. Just, I say. Often that doesn't feel enough to me, and often it's because I'm not really recognizing how present God is and how present I can be with God. The problems aren't the problem. The problem would be separation from God. I have to admit, only some of this sounds good, or it sounds only so good. I recognize the value of being joined in sadness by a friend who sees me, hears me, stays with me, even in those hard feelings. But I also struggle with the notion that this is enough. Most of all, I can't believe it's enough for those who suffer things I've never suffered, for parents of children who've been suffering with horrible diseases, for people who are suffering famine or war, or people who've lost their spouses, loved ones. Things I've not experienced, but I could someday. And I think of all these others who are in worse shape than I am and think, it feels very patronizing for me to think, well, just be with God. That's good enough, right? I have trouble trusting God's loving presence to be enough for those people. And probably for me too, if they ever happen to me. At the core of it all is a question of trust. This is not easy. Good news, the teaching is not finished. Bad news, it's a hard lesson. This week we're continuing essentially the same passage, starting at a place where the author Luke did not originally divide the text. This is an artificial division that we've made and that the verses that were put into place long ago make. So we're just continuing. But here's what I want to add to what Mark shared last week. I don't think I have additional insight, but as the passage continues, we hear a reassuring and strenuous call to actually live into this, to practice God's loving presence, to work at being aware. You might call it prayer or meditation or mindfulness. I call it difficult. In the Message, this passage has a heading I find helpful. It says, steep yourself in God reality. That verb steep suggests the metaphor you see on the screen. Now, I really enjoy using a hot tub, especially in the winter. But as much as I enjoy lowering myself into hot water, it can be hard. At first, it stings for the first few seconds. It can feel like it's a little too hot to handle. And then my body adjusts, and for some time, it's really pleasant. But then again, after a while, it can become too much in a less acute way. I can overheat. I need to start sticking my toes out and lifting more of my body out into the cool air. I start to feel overcooked and anxious. Similarly, I have a hard time sitting in prayer, steeping myself in God's presence. At first, I feel the sting of all the things I could be doing, all the projects and Netflix shows I should still finish. As I get used to sitting, waiting, being present, trying to attend to the present teacher, I may feel some moments of joy and fullness, but all too soon I start to feel restless, anxious, fearful that time is slipping away, just incapable of maintaining my focus on God. It's not easy to practice steeping myself in God reality. So that's a bit of a challenge, learning to accept the unfixed world and turn toward God at all times is not easy. But it's essentially a message of comfort. God's with us. We can work to remember this and try to stop worrying. In fact, the text shows Jesus saying exactly that in verses 25 and 26. Can all your worries add a single moment to your life? And if worry can't accomplish a little thing like that, what's the use of worrying over bigger things? Isn't that a gentle, friendly nudge? It's a couple of rhetorical questions suggesting that there's a better way. We don't have to worry. Picture God saying, hey, I notice you're carrying quite a load there. I'll take that. The parallel passage in Matthew 6:34 reads, so don't worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will bring its own worries. Today's trouble is enough for today. That's a bit more assertive directive, as some other verses in Luke are as well. It's an imperative sentence. Don't worry. This is one of the commands Jesus gives his disciples. Let's say that a different way. If we obey the commands of Jesus, we do not worry. On one hand, that sounds great. I'd like to worry less. On the other hand, these passages in both Luke and Matthew suggest there's a trade-off. Jesus asks his disciples to let go of their control, their worries, their stuff, their money, all as one package deal. I'm not suggesting we can actually do this in one swell swoop, once for a lifetime, and be all settled. It seems to be a struggle of every living moment, but control and worry are part of the same object. I can either take control of my life and my stuff and have all those worries and anxieties that go with that control, or I can let it all go together. There's no control without worry. Sadly, conversely, there is worry without control. Can all your worries add a single moment to your life? I think it's worth noticing here exactly whom Jesus is talking to. In verse 21 from last week, he wraps up the parable of the rich fool with something my sophomore students wish every author would include, a direct theme statement, so we don't have to go to all the trouble of looking up for ourselves on ChatGPT. Jesus says, yes, a person is a fool to store up earthly wealth but not have a rich relationship with God. At the start of today's passage, he does a little pivot to a different audience. In verse 22, it says, then turning to his disciples, Jesus said, that's why I tell you not to worry about everyday life. So Jesus is turning from this crowd of folks who've gathered around to see what's going on with this traveling preacher to his disciples, the smaller group of people who've left their homes and their life-making to follow him around the countryside, providing for his needs out of their surplus. Mary Magdalene may well have been a fairly well-off businesswoman who provided for Jesus along with other people. and or depending along with him on the hospitality of whomever they met along the way. These were itinerants. They were part of a long existing tradition in the countryside around and outside of Jerusalem. These are people who have already taken some life-altering, life-risking steps to follow this rabbi from nowhere. They're not mere onlookers. Most of them have all their skin in the game. If this group falls apart, even if they survive that, they're toast. They have to walk several days back to their homes, try to reestablish their businesses, maybe recover their fishing boats. That's if they survive. And try to rebuild their lives. All that carrying the scorn of their failed movement, their lost hopes every step of the way. They have a lot riding on this thing. But here they are, still following Jesus, hoping he's the real deal. They're probably wondering how they can get their laundry done. It's not easy to keep wandering around in the same tunic on dusty roads every day. And even if people are polite about it, they probably smell you. For the disciples, Jesus is directly addressing in this context. This passage might be profoundly relevant to their present moment, to these, his closest followers, who need a bath, a meal, a change of clothes. Jesus says, I tell you not to worry about everyday life, whether you have enough food to eat or enough clothes to wear. For life is more than food, and your body more than clothing. That's what Jesus says to his grimy little inner circle in this context. But 2 millennia later, here we are with mortgages and car payments. Most of us washed and well-fed, wearing dignified, if not fashionable, clothing. And ready to head back to work tomorrow to continue paying those mortgages and driving kids around, and picking up groceries, sort laundry. What does God say to us here, we who have not already left everything behind, but are trying to follow Jesus in this time and place, who have health insurance and retirement accounts, however modest they may be? Thanks to Mark's helpful way of framing this for us last week, I think I'm beginning to understand in concept, if not in practice, that if God's presence is enough, then I don't need to worry about all that other stuff. If God is with me, I can afford to let go of more of my money and my control. If God is here with me, I am okay on a deep, eternal, existential level. And the difficulties and disappointments, anxieties and sufferings don't really matter like they would otherwise. And maybe this is where the kingdom of God comes to life. If ordinary people like us can learn to give up control, to be okay simply because we're steeped and immersed and bathed in the love of the loving presence of God, then we'll be less selfish, less needy, more able and ready to share our stuff and ourselves. If that little seed grows and other people around us also become more secure, what a different world this could be. Imagine if presidents and prime ministers and oligarchs had that kind of an attitude, confiding in God's presence rather than grasping for control. Now that feels like too much to hope for. Maybe it's only and simply enough for us to be held in God's arms and stop worrying about the rich and powerful. Our job isn't necessarily to change them, it's to be faithful ourselves. So that's all pretty good and pretty hard, but then come verses 33 and 34. Sell your possessions and give to those in need. This will store up treasure for you in heaven, and the purses of heaven never get old or develop holes. Your treasure will be safe. No thief can steal it, no moth can destroy it. Wherever your treasure is, there the desires of your heart will be also. Dang it. I was starting to think this could be nice. Could we just steep in that holy hot tub for a while? It seems like Jesus is calling our bluff, even if thinking about it that way can be a way of trying to get around it. Well, no, really, Jesus, I mean it. So can I keep my stuff? Maybe this is just a commitment device. If I buy the godly gym membership now that will give me the power, the willpower to really trust God all month, right? And I maybe don't even have to show up at the gym. And if that's all it is, then I don't have to actually do it. So I can hang on to the stuff that keeps me worrying or in control and probably miss the whole point. It starts to feel like going in against a Sicilian when death is on the line. There's no easy way out. Jesus actually said to his disciples, "Sell your possessions and give to those in need." And I don't want to do that. But I see two ways we might take this seriously. One, crazy thought, maybe it really means exactly what he says, literally do it. And two, if that seems like an insurmountable barrier, like crawling through the eye of a needle maybe, maybe I could start small, give sacrificially and see what happens. Am I still okay? Is God still with me? Can I trust God even after I give that away? I could think of this as a spiritual trust fall, an exercise that helps me practice using God's, trusting God and relinquishing control. I'm probably overlooking some other possibilities. It may not be a true dilemma. It may be there are other ways to interpret this command to sell my possessions. Or maybe the command is for those people back then and not for me. I'd like to step back from the wind whistling over the brink of that radicalism and marvel at the genius of Jesus' teaching. He's giving us a lesson, a promise, a challenge all wrapped up together. He's offering boundless peace and security in the arms of God. All it costs is our own illusion of control over our lives, our money, our stuff, our energy, our time. He's offering serenity in God's loving presence. All I have to do is stop trying to fix the world's problems or telling God how he should do it. Jesus is offering to let God have the whole world in God's hands, which is probably a better place for it than my own. There's an image from the Scottish author George MacDonald from his book Lilith, where the main character has gripped her hands so tightly that her fingers has fused into her hand. She can't let go of her fist, where she's holding the world's water. All of creation could be watered by what's in her hand. And at last, she has to have that hand cut off by a sword. She's redeemed at last. Sometimes I wonder if I'll need a sword to amputate my grip on control. In comparison with that, maybe giving away some of my goods or energy or freedom may not be the hardest way forward. In one sense, this feels like maybe just the next level of attainment in learning to trust God. It's an advanced challenge to my need for control. I could work with sell some of your possessions and give to those in need, but this doesn't seem to have any such merciful modifiers. And again, I say, dang it. If I were in charge of editing this book of Luke, I would cut verses 33 and 34. That makes such a nice, cozy message about God's loving presence and provision for us. Verse 32 caps it off beautifully. So don't be afraid, little flock, for it gives your Father great happiness to give you the kingdom. Isn't that lovely? Let's just stop right there. But no, Jesus has to go pushing things too far. Yet again, one of these days you think he's going to get himself killed. I'd even be okay with most of this as a way to finish off the lesson about trusting God. Store up treasure for you in heaven. All the purses of heaven, and the purses of heaven never get old or develop holes. Your treasure will be safe, etc. That's still nice, challenging, but nice. But apparently Jesus isn't going for nice. He's clearly not running for office. Sell your possessions and give to those in need. We were having such a nice time leaning on those everlasting arms. Tain't so sweet now, is it, Jesus? Why you always got to push things so far? I found a Reddit post entitled, "Do I Have to Sell My Things?" Luke 12:33. You don't even have to click the link to see the problem, do you? "Do I have to?" says it all. God isn't prying our possessions out of our tight little fists. He's asking, do you trust me? And I know exactly what my answer is when I start with, do I have to? I find myself negotiating. Can I just get the participation medal? I'd settle for a bronze crown, even a tin crown, or a seat at on the third class carriage of the glory train. I'm not trying to upend my whole life here. To give away more than I feel able to afford is an exercise in faith, in lowering myself into even hotter, holier water. It's good for mental health, being present in the moment in which things really are okay, even if it feels like next month we might not make rent. Maybe more importantly, it's worship. It's trusting God beyond what feels safe. It's not just a technique, it's obedience. It's acknowledgement that God is in charge and should be, and I should not. And I can trust God, the one who is here with us, the loving presence who is heaven itself, where I hope to spend eternity. The present is all we have, and living in it with the one who made it is the ultimate gift. So let's sit together in that loving presence now, friends. You're welcome to practice just being present with God, or to ponder, or to preach if God is giving you a message for all of us. But whatever you do, do it in the loving presence of God.